Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. It's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We're back for another edition of the best of Drive Time Sports. We're continuing to play some of my favorite national sports interviews of 2020, and we have another good show lined up for you today. If you like baseball, it's right up your alley. Billy Ripken, brother of Cal Ripken, joined us a little while ago. We talked about analytics in baseball. Also, Ron Wotus, one of the longest tenured coaches in Major League Baseball right now, a third base coach for the San Francisco Giants. And we also talked to one of the greatest college football players of all time, Herschel Walker. That's what's in store on today's edition of Drive Time Sports. Again, we are playing the best national sports interviews of 2020. We do this every year, the week of Christmas, and we're going to continue in just a few moments right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Billy Ripken, Ron Wotus, Herschel Walker. It's all straight ahead on the best of Drive Time Sports.
The choice is yours. Sutherland's Friends of the Family Plus Consumer Credit Card lets you choose from 5% off instantly at the register or special financing on qualifying purchases. That means no forms, no waiting, no rebates. You can choose 5% off instantly with your Sutherland's Credit Card. Got a big project? Choose special financing. The choice is yours with Sutherland's Friends of the Family Plus Consumer Credit Card. Subject to credit approval, minimum monthly payment required. See store for details. Only at Sutherland's.
Tired of your worn-out, dated kitchen cabinets? Painting them is an easy way to make them look new and refresh your entire kitchen. Benjamin Moore Advance makes painting cabinets a snap. Whether brushed, rolled, or sprayed, Advance leaves a smooth, durable finish with the added benefit of easy soap and water cleanup. Available in high-gloss, semi-gloss, satin, and matte finishes. And it's available in thousands of famous Benjamin Moore colors, so you are sure to get the perfect color and elegant look your cabinets deserve. Come into Spectrum Paint Supply today. 80 South, 100 West.
Hot and buttery fresh popped popcorn. An ice cold Pepsi. Escape the stresses of the hectic work week and relax at the Price and King Cole Theaters.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Why? From the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Feeling like a bullet, jumping out
a gun. I'm feeling like a winner. I am thrilled to bring in our next guest here on the show. We're going to talk Major League Baseball. Our next guest spent 12 years in the big leagues, and now he's an analyst for MLB Network. He's also won an Emmy for the work that he does with the network. And he's got a new book out. It's called State of Play. That book is actually available for purchase right now. He's Bill Ripken. And Bill, it's a pleasure to get you on today. Thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Oh, it's definitely my pleasure. That is for sure. Let's talk about the new book, Bill, that you have now released. It's been out, I know, for a couple of weeks. It's called State of Play. And I find this so interesting because we are constantly going back and forth on this conversation on the show all the time about analytics and the new wave of baseball and the fact that you have people now running baseball teams that don't know much about the game. They are numbers gurus. And so when you look at State of Play, this is something that will kind of, maybe make more sense of those lines that go between the two.
Well, I put the book out there because I think over the past few years, with that onslaught of new front offices and people that haven't necessarily been in the game, they are numbers people. The assumption seems to be made over the past few years that old school baseball guys don't like numbers and don't like information. And that's the farthest thing from the truth. We've always used numbers. We've always used information. But the difference is we use numbers and information that we can apply to baseball. And I believe there's some of these new terminologies that are thrown out there in the game today that really don't have much bearing on you hit it better, you pitch it better, you catch it better than the other team, and you win philosophy that maybe an old school guy might have.
One of my favorite quotes in the game of baseball comes from Lee Elia, former coach of the Cubs, where he said the name of the game is to hit the ball, catch the ball, and get the bleeping job done. You know, sometimes we overlook that. It's such a true statement in the game of baseball. But when we're looking at all these new terms as far as angles and all these new sayings and new stats in baseball, it does get a little bit aggravating, I think, for people that are just fans of the game.
Well, first of all, launch angle can be discussed, and we can just establish that launch angle is nothing more than the ball coming off the bat. That's what the launch angle is. The more that term has been used over the past few years, people are starting to equate it to a swing. The swing is not the launch angle. The ball coming off the bat is. Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, both had launch angles, and probably one that was designed around a home run, but that was their individual swing, so the fact that we can now measure the precise angle at what the ball is coming off the bat, we give it this little catching phrase of launch angle. It misleads people because then someone covering a game might say, well, he improved his launch angle. Well, Javi Baez turned himself into one of the league's better players. In 2016, he was good. 2017, he was better. 2018, he was better than that, and his average launch angle in the year actually went from 11 down to 9.2. So if you improve a launch angle, does it necessarily have to go up, or can it go down in Javi Baez's case? And I believe in Javi Baez's case, he's much better for having a lower launch angle.
So explain to me spin rate, and pitch framing is one that I'm definitely familiar with. I think a lot of baseball fans are, but these are often two other terms that you will hear in today's game. So how does spin rate and pitch framing, what does that actually mean to the game?
Well, spin rate, it's never a bad thing to have good spin rate, but you can have the best spin rate in the world, and if you throw ball one, ball two, and you're behind every hitter, two balls and no strikes, your spin rate's going to get hit. Once again, spin rate's not new. They just have now the calibration to be able to measure the ball spinning to home plate. James Alvin Palmer used to throw high fastballs for the Orioles, and the old school guy used to say, well, he's got extra life. He's got some giddy up on that heater. And the ones that tell you that you can pitch up there, like Jim Palmer did, was the hitters, because they swung and missed it. So you don't need to necessarily have something calibrated to understand what it is. So once again, spin rate is not new. The ball is always spun to home plate. The fact that we can measure it and now we abuse the term, that's new. Now, pitch framing to me is very interesting because this is a measurement of a catcher basically deceiving the umpire. So in a chapter in the book, I basically say there's probably five or six other things that are more important on why a pitch is called a strike or a ball other than the catcher catching it. So, for example, if I'm facing Nolan Ryan back in the day. Nolan Ryan had a much better reputation than I did, and he got the benefit of the doubt on close pitches no matter who was catching. Wade Boggs and Frank Thomas had better strike zones than I think I did because they had better reputation going into it. And if you think about the ball crossing home plate is about 3.5 feet before the catcher even catches it anyway. So it's a strike 3.5 feet before the catcher catches it. So measuring pitch framing and trying to put a value on that for any said catcher is a little bit alarming to me because there's other things that enter into play before the catcher actually catches the ball.
Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Ripken. He was a 12-year Major League veteran, also an Emmy Award-winning analyst with MLB Network, as we talk about his new book, State of Play. Bill, what went into you actually sitting down and writing this book? At what point in time did you say, okay, this is something I actually want to discuss? I want to kind of mix the nuances of today's game and the analytical world of today and maybe mix it with some of the teachings and some of the way that that I know the game. What was it that was the tipping point for you to say, okay, this is the book?
I just think the connotation was out there that the new school guys were just really, really smart people and the old school guys weren't. So when I started jotting down some notes probably January of 2019, and the more notes I started putting down and some of the phrases that are used, you know, defensive run saved is a stat that they used, and they make it like it's gospel, but it doesn't have anything to do with an actual defensive run saved. And that and WAR, W-A-R, they have formulas that are locked behind closed doors that my researchers don't even know how these things are calculated. And my researchers at the network are really good and smart people. So if you keep something locked behind closed door, and then you want to throw out every month, you know, this is what his DRS is and this is what his WAR is, and we can't even know what it means and how it was formulated, I've got issues with that.
So it almost comes across to me, Bill, and you can tell me if I'm completely wrong here, but just looking at the way that these particular statistics are almost hidden, is it a political game? Do you believe that it's political in the sense to where it's catered towards certain players, maybe more marketable players?
I don't know if it's political in that way. I think there's certain websites that keep their formulas under lock and key because they like generating these things, and there's people out there that value them. But if it's not out in front, I don't understand how it necessarily can be gospel. The other thing with defensive runs saved, they pit after the 2018 season. Chapman was listed at like 29 defensive runs saved as a third baseman for Oakland. Nolan Arenado was listed at 6. And I look at those numbers and say, well, you're telling me that Chapman's 5 times better than Nolan Arenado? And then I'll have some supporter of the DRS stats say, no, 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 that's not what these numbers say. And then I have to in turn say, no, that's exactly what these numbers are saying. And if neither one of these numbers has anything to do with an actual defensive run saved, I don't know how we can be definitive at the end of the year saying he's 29 and he's 6. It just makes no sense to me.
Bill, I've often had this thought, especially as we start to use more and more of these analytical terms and we start to get more people who aren't baseball people into front offices and making personnel decisions. How much in your mind, or if at all, has fantasy baseball impacted the landscape of today's game with the amount of numbers that we are using?
Well, it kind of seems like we're in fantasy baseball when we're
it
dealing
does.
With Major League Baseball, because all those numbers and everything that are used, the other thing is these formulas that get thrown out there, they seem to have a shelf life of a couple years. XFIP, when it first came on the scene 3 or 4 years ago, I mean, I was just getting nauseated about how many times I heard the term XFIP, XFIP. And now I've not heard it anymore. You know, they come up with something else that they want to throw out there. DRS is a version of UZR, and now I've seen people pushing OAA, which is outs above average, more than DRS in the past few months. So if the formulas are not perfect, and they will say to you, oh, we know that these aren't perfect, okay, then don't throw them out there on us and expect us to use them as their gospel.
I definitely think that this book is going to bring up a lot of fun conversations with different people who have separate trains of thoughts on the way the game should be at least looked at in today's world, which I really, really like, Bill. So I have to ask you, what was your favorite part about this book? Is there a specific chapter that maybe you were a tad bit more passionate about, maybe a specific topic that you maybe even put a little bit more effort into, or maybe you even have a harder opinion than others in this book?
Well, I think two of the chapters, one was the launch angle and one was DRS, because those are misused and abused year-long during the baseball season. And I'm sure they'll be misused and abused all year-long in this next season. I enjoyed probably writing the introduction and the first chapter on my father, probably as much as anything, just kind of laying out there some of things that are said to be new in the game aren't. These things have been going on forever. And just going back through and talking about my father's minor league days when he was the manager, and how when you stand at the top step of the dugout as the manager in the minor leagues and you watch every pitch of every game and you're in charge of getting players to the big leagues, there's no doubt in my mind I would prefer dad's eyeballs on a player in double A over any spreadsheet to tell me that that guy's going to play in the big leagues and be a productive player for my organization for years to come. So I just want to point out that the old school guy likes numbers. We use numbers, and there is no substitution. There really isn't for experience and somebody that's actually lived the game as far as getting an honest baseball answer.
Again, Bill Ripken, author of the book State of Play. It is available right now. You can get it off Amazon. You can find it in bookstores all over the country. Definitely check it out. It will provoke some interesting conversation, I have no doubt. Bill, before I let you go, you were just talking about your dad, and so I want to bring this up because I think it is so important in today's world that we talk about what you do past baseball, right? How do you guys inspire kids in today's world? You and your brother have co-founded the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. I think this is a very, very fantastic thing. So I want to go off topic, if I can, for just a second and let you explain to the listening audience what the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation is and how you guys help out underprivileged communities.
Well, Senior was a teacher, first and foremost, and him and my mother were heavily involved in the Boys and Girls Club in Aberdeen, Maryland, where they grew up. And when we lost Dad, we started the foundation to affect some kids that needed some help. And we are so proud of the fact that that's morphed into now where sometime during the 2020 season, we will have built 100 youth development parks around the country. And these youth development parks are synthetic surface. It's a good, safe play area. We partner with either a Boys and Girls Club, a YMCA, a police athletic league. And when we raise the money and we build these fields, we gift them to the community that they belong to because they already have the people there at these facilities that are willing to work with the kids on a day-in and day-out basis. But our theory, if we build these youth development parks and they're really nice in an area of need, we hope the kids after school will decide to go right to the field where people can care about them instead of going left where they might get into a little bit of trouble. So these parks are popping up all over the place around the country. If anybody wants to check out Cal Ripken Senior Foundation and look on there, you will wish you were a kid again to be able to go into some of these fields because some of them are really, really nice.
Bill Ripken, former Major League Baseball player and analyst from MLB Network and author of the new book, State of Play. Bill, such a pleasure to get you on the show today. I definitely appreciate the time. It was a fun conversation. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
Still to come on the best of Drive Time Sports, you'll hear from longtime San Francisco Giant third base coach Ron Wotus. Plus, one of the greatest college football players of all time, Herschel Walker.
Imagine having the perfect snow shovel, one that takes the work out of shoveling the snow. One where the snow doesn't stick, it just rolls off the blade like a plow. A shovel with a 6-year guarantee against breakage that has a D-grip handle and is lightweight. Hi, this is Alan at Peterson Chemical and Janitorial, and we've been selling the Bigfoot Snow Shovel for over 30 years. Come on down to 373 South, 100 West in Price, and get yours today. That's Peterson Chemical Company.
Remodeling a house can be fun, stressful, exciting, and sometimes cause serious anxiety. Let Nichols Remodeling and Construction help, a company that values their customers, going the extra mile to make sure they're satisfied and the job is done right the first time. Nichols has full-time painters on staff and a custom cabinetry shop. How many other remodeling companies can say that? From tile to excavation, they do it all. Call Jackson Nichols at 630-8687 to schedule an appointment.
What could be better than high school football? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. What could be better than an afternoon soccer game? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. What could be better than a baseball game? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. You get the point, right? Everything is better when you add a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Eating that juicy golden fried chicken and watching your team play live is the best combination ever. Get to KFC before your next game.
You were listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball. Deep to left field. Way, way back. It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Still got that itch for Major League Baseball. Unfortunately, I don't think we're getting any games anytime soon. We're going to try to scratch that itch right now with our next guest. He is the longest tenured coach in Major League Baseball, Ron Wotus. Three-time World Series champion with the San Francisco Giants, and he's actually been a part of that bench squad since 1997 when he took over underneath Dusty Baker. He's joining us right now over the phone. Ron, a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you so much for the time.
Jordan, it's nice to be with you today.
As I mentioned, one of the longest tenured coaches in Major League Baseball, or are you the longest tenured coach right now?
Yeah, you know, I know Glenn Hoffman's been around a long time. I have him maybe by a year, I think, in the big leagues. But there's another coach, Dave McKay, who's with Arizona, who's been doing it longer than I have. But I think he might have been out of a job for a year or two, and he started off with Tony La Russa, who's a Northern California guy. And Dave McKay's been with Tony La Russa from the very beginning. And, you know, now La Russa retired, he ended up landing a job with the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he's their first base coach, and he's living at home. And he's probably the senior most longest amount of years in the major leagues, probably next to me.
It's fantastic. And I want to talk about your coaching career because obviously it goes way, way back. In fact, before you actually made the jump to the Giants, you actually served as a manager in the minor leagues, correct? And I believe that you were also manager of the year at one particular time.
Yeah. You know, when I was getting ready to, well, when I was done playing, you know, I had a couple offers. I was back in AAA. You know, I was drafted and played for the Pittsburgh Pirates most of my career, got parts of three seasons with them, retired as a player, and I took a coaching job with the San Francisco Giants. I played my last 2 years at AAA with them. And I had some minor league opportunities to go play for the Mets and another team. And I had a chance to go to Italy and play. And I said, I'm going to make a career change. So I started managing in the minor league. And, there was 2 years. I was fortunate. I had good clubs. I had manager of the year two times there. My last 2 years was in Phoenix with the Phoenix Firebirds. And I know you're out there in Salt Lake. And I actually manage against your Salt Lake club there when the Minnesota Twins were in town.
That's fantastic. So you've definitely been well-traveled. Let me ask you this, Ron. What's the biggest adjustment you have to make between being a player and then transitioning into the coach? I mean, what was the most difficult transition for you?
Well, I think that, when you're a player, you worry about yourself. You know, you can control everything that you have to do, your work, your attitude, your approach. But now when you're managing or coaching, you have to worry about 25 guys. And, the days of, the players all conforming to the coach or the manager are long gone. It's more that the manager or the coach has to adjust to the 25 guys on his roster. And it takes some time and experience to realize that that's a big part of it, you know. So it's an adjustment on how you think and how you want to help other players because, you know, when you're just worried about yourself, if you want to take extra ground balls or you want to hit more or whatever it is, you can do it. But, you know, not all the players are on the same program as you are, and you got to find a way to help them the best you can with their attitudes and their approaches.
Well, let's talk about your Giants career, specifically as third base coach. So you make that leap, correct, in 1998 under Dusty Baker. And from that point on, boy, you've been a part of some really fantastic teams in San Francisco.
Yeah, very fortunate. So 98, I was called up from Phoenix. I became the third base coach in 98 and the infield coach. And then in 99, Dusty moved me to the bench coach. And I stayed as the bench coach with the San Francisco Giants for 19 seasons. And it wasn't until 2017, we had lost 98 games in San Francisco. We had some of our coaches were let go. We kind of had a big revamping of the whole thing, and they asked me if I would coach third base. So I've been back out at third base the last two seasons, and that was the first time since 98. But to your point, we've been very fortunate. We've been the four World Series, and we won three of them. The one we lost was in 2002 against the Anaheim Angels.
Let's start with that particular World Series because it was a battle. I mean, it goes seven games, and this is the same season that Barry Bonds, I believe he wins back-to-back MVPs, if I'm not mistaken. So if you go back to 2002, I mean, just a fascinating season all the way across, and you go seven games against the Angels. What's that like, a grueling seven-game World Series, especially one that ends in a loss?
Yeah, no, it was a tough series. I mean, the Angels were scoring all kinds of runs that year, and we actually were up 3-2 and heading back down to Anaheim for games 6 and 7, and we actually had a 5-2 lead in the seventh inning in game 6, and anyways, long story short, they come back to win that game, and then in game 7 they beat us. So it was tough, and I think the whole Bay Area, myself, the players, it was a tough pill to swallow to go into a Game 7 and not win it. And I'm telling you, I'll tell you what won it for them was that darn monkey they have down there in Anaheim would show up on the scoreboard and get the fans going. They had a good team, and we just couldn't hold them down, and they won that World Series. But it was a battle, and it was great for the Giants because it's the first time they've been to the World Series in a long, long time. And you know, it was a transition because that following year, Dusty Baker was our manager. He did not renew his contract after going to the World Series. He went to the Chicago Cubs. I had to make a decision to go with him or stay here in San Francisco. I ended up staying San Francisco, and it's been the right decision for me because I've been here ever since.
Yeah, it doesn't take too long for you guys to get back to the World Series, right? 7 or 8 seasons. You get back, you win a World Series against the Texas Rangers. We just talked about the pain of losing a 7-game World Series to the Angels. What's it like when you finally climb that mountain? You take care of the Rangers in 5 games in 2010.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. You know, it was been, you know, since 50, I think 54 that the Giants had won a World Series. They hadn't won a World Series on the West Coast since they moved from New York when they made that transition. So this city just went bonkers. And as a player, a coach, manager, you know, it's a feeling of such accomplishment when you win that last game. And, you know, the whole winter it carries for you. You know, it's a great feeling to have won, but you find that all winter long, you're sleeping better, you're eating better, you just have a smile on your face, and you can't believe that you won. And then to go on and do it 2 more times in 12 and 14, I still shake my head on how we were able to accomplish that, because we were never a juggernaut on paper. I mean, you know, we played good ball at the right time. We definitely was deserving, but winning is so fleeting, like it was in 2002. You know, a blue pit, anything can go wrong, and usually you're on the short end of the stick. Something happens where you don't win a game, and you don't win, you know, you don't get to the playoffs, or you don't win the World Series. So to do it 3 times in that span is just unbelievable.
I know if we talk 2012, you had two series go to the brink, right? It was a 5-game set with the Reds and a 7-game set with the Cardinals before an ultimate sweep against the Tigers. And then in 2014, we're talking about a 7-game World Series, and this time you come out on top against the Royals. That's some remarkable baseball, some really gripping on the edge of your seat baseball.
Yeah, I think to do it in 2012 was really we were against all odds because we were down 2-0 in the first round of the playoffs to Cincinnati, and we had Barry Zito going on the mound in the third game, and Cincinnati had not This was at home. We were done. Then we went to Cincinnati. So we lost two in San Francisco. Now we go to Cincinnati to play three more. You know, it was a 3-5 series. And Cincinnati had not been swept at home all year. Well, long story short, we end up winning that game. We end up coming back, win three in a row, and beat them. And then we were down 3-1 against St. Louis Cardinals in that league championship series. And we came back to win three straight to win. We had, six, elimination games that we were able to win every one of them. And then, of course, we went to the World Series and we swept the Tigers. So go figure. The World Series was easier than getting there.
Again, our guest right now is Ron Wotus, one of the longest tenured coaches in Major League Baseball, right now serving as a coach for the San Francisco Giants. Ron, with all that being said, you've had the opportunity to be around some really unique players. I mean, I would definitely be doing the listeners a disservice when I ask you, if I didn't ask you, what was so special about Barry Bonds, who in my mind is probably the most feared hitter we've ever seen?
Yeah, Jordan, no question about it. He's the best player I've ever been around. You know, I was fortunate to play with Barry in AAA when I was back with the Pirates. I was older than him, and he was coming up. We spent a half a season together, and you knew right then and there that he was extremely talented. If you would have told me back then that he would be the home run king and accomplish what he did, I could have never seen that coming. But he's much maligned for a lot of reasons and all that, but he's as dedicated as a player that I've ever seen. He was religious in his workouts and his approach to the game. Whenever he set his mind to anything, he accomplished it. And what people don't realize, he had physical ability, but he had mental know-how and toughness that's really at the top level of great athletes. And that really makes players in the major leagues. You know, the talent takes you so far, but your mental approach and your mental capacity. And talking about his hitting, he had the shortest swing and the most disciplined knowledge of the strike zone. He did not leave the strike zone. And, of course, as he got stronger over the years and hit those home runs, it just shows how great he was. And one year he walked over 200 times, and I could go on and on with stories about Barry Bonds, but he certainly mentally and physically is the best I've ever seen.
Now, Ron, I asked you a question before we hopped on the air about an interesting story, and you mentioned one with the Los Angeles Dodgers that involves Tim Lincecum, who, again, was just outstanding in the middle of his prime. And with me being a Dodger fan, again, my ears perked right up. A very interesting story about where you were basically forced into the manager role because Bruce Bochy was tossed. I love this story.
Yeah, being the bench coach, when the manager's tossed, you take over. And that's back before video replay, right? So managers don't get tossed anymore. Because the video replay, there's not as much reasons to get thrown out when they mess up a call. But in this particular game, Lincecum was in his prime. We're winning 1-0. I think Boach got let go, got thrown out in the third inning. Gary Darling was the first base coach. He made two terrible calls in the game, almost cost us the game. And anyways, Boach is gone, so I'm managing the rest of the way. And, you know, I had my feet up on the rail because Lincecum is just cruising. He's dominating. He must have 14 or 15 strikeouts. Now it's the top of the ninth. Packed house, Dodgers, our rival. And I can't remember the hitter, but there was a ground ball. Umpire calls him safe at first. Gary Darling, his third missed call. And I said, oh, the heck with it. I mean, you know, Lincecum's in full control. He had like 80 pitches. So I run out there. I get tossed from the game. So now the manager's gone. The bench coach is gone. And I hand the lineup card to Tim Flannery, who was our third base coach. So now he's got to manage the game. They ended up tying the game in the ninth. That leadoff single, tied the game. Lincecum goes, I think, 9 or 10 innings. He leaves the game. We put other pitchers in. And meanwhile, Boach is trying to help Flannery manage the game from the tunnel, right? He's down in the tunnel trying to give him information. That's difficult to do because, you know, the communication, and you got to be thinking ahead on what you want to do. Anyways, Boach wants Flannery to pinch hit for Juan Uribe, and he doesn't. He didn't get the message quick enough. Uribe comes up, hits a home run, we win the game, like in the 14th inning. So we all go in, we're all happy, everybody's excited. Flannery's exhausted, and Boach calls Flannery, and he goes, you got to listen to me. I wanted you to do this, I wanted you to do that. You didn't listen. And he goes, that's a problem, you got to listen. And Flann looks at him, and he says, Boach, The problem is, when I woke up this morning at 8 a.m., I didn't think I'd be managing the game against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And that was a great point. So he was the third down on the list, and he ended up getting credited for the win.
There's no doubt that Bruce Bochy's on his way to the Hall of Fame, right? I mean, we're talking about one of the best that we have seen in quite some time. What was it like serving under Bochy?
Oh, it's been great. I've been really fortunate with, you know, Dusty Baker for 5 years and Felipe Alou for 5 years and Bruce Bochy. I think we spent 11 years together. You know, he was really an old school manager, a player's manager. He's not a man of many words. You know, he kind of leads the old school way. You know, he had managers, tough guys in the past that he had played for, and he took a lot from them, the Bill Verdon type guys. And anyways, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, to have success that we had, just unbelievable, and we were a close-knit group, not just with Boch, but all the coaches. And whenever you have success like that as a group, they're some of the best days of your professional career.
Now, Ron, one more question before I let you go. And we have this conversation with Bill Lasky, a great friend of the show, each week when we talk about analytics in baseball. And I know that at times you've been responsible for defensive shifts. I'm curious as to your thoughts in analytics and the way the game is played today, or maybe the way that the game is moving compared to where it was at when you first started taking over as the third base coach.
Yeah, well, it's changed so much. I mean, you know, if you got another hour, I can get into it a little bit, but I'll keep it as brief as I can. You know, when I first started, we were using VH tapes to look at other teams' games, you know, to scout them on top of our advanced scouts. Well, today there's no advanced scouts. Everything's done in-house on the computers by analysts. And I'll just say this. I think the analytics has brought a dynamic to the game that is very positive. But I really believe you need the blend of the analytics and people with the baseball instincts that have played and understand the human element. See, the problem with statistics are they don't have all the variables in a game. So you can tell me whether it's in hitting or defensing somebody on the shift. You could say, well, the percentages tell you to do this. But you don't know how that hitter's swinging that day. You don't know about the pitcher on the mound. So we have more variables and more detailed information over the analytics when you get in the moment in the game, you know. And I think that's the biggest discrepancy between the analytics and the people that have been on the field and have played the game and have a feel for these moments and all these other variables. It's hard to discount those because you live them. And I live them. The analytics help us today. I mean, it helps in defensing, guys, for sure. Look at all the outs people are making, the shift. People can't hit the ball through the shift. They're pitching better to the hitter's weaknesses. So there's a lot of positive, but it is a bit of adjustment. And I think it's gone, you know, to 80 to 90% analytics and 10% feel and all the other variables in today's game.
I've always been of the mindset that there is way too many variables to predict with the computer or with just sheer numbers, right? I mean, honestly, I think you hit it right on the head, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here. There's really no way to judge, A, what a pitcher's feeling at this particular moment, B, what a batter's feeling at this particular moment, or maybe if we even take a look at position players as well, there is an element to it that will never be able to be deciphered through numbers in a computer.
No, you're exactly right. You know, I set the defense and set the shifts for my whole time that I was the bench coach here and the infield coach. And you're exactly right. I mean, if we got a guy throwing 95 down and away as hard as he can, and, you know, he's pulling everything and a guy can really locate, you might not be able to have to shift on that guy. I mean, that's the simplest example that I can give you. And we're just not looking at plots. Okay, so if you just look at the statistic and look at plots, and, you know, our analysts would give me the maps and say, okay, we want to do this, but I'd watch video. I'd watch every day the last 2 weeks of the swings by the player because players make adjustments. Are they going to hit the ball the other way? As I said, you got to get throwing 95 down and away, and we're going to pitch him away. If we're going to pitch him soft or we're going to pitch him in, okay, he's going to pull it as a lefty. So there's so many other variables that you have to put in there. So you got to blend the two, and you still got to look at video if you want to be the best at what you're doing with all the information that's available.
Ron Wotus, again, coach for the San Francisco Giants. Ron, I've really enjoyed the conversation over the last 15, 20 minutes. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day, and hopefully we get some baseball relatively soon.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I just hopefully we can get this this virus under control so we can play baseball, but more importantly, we can all go back to work and go back to our great style of living that we have. And Jordan, I enjoyed being with you, so give me a call anytime.
Still to come on the best of Drive Time Sports, you'll hear from College Football Hall of Famer and Heisman Trophy winner Herschel Walker.
Everything rolls around you at Graco's Tire Pros Traction Sale. Earn up to a $100 prepaid Visa gift card with the purchase of 4 qualifying General tires. Get a $70 prepaid Visa gift card with the purchase of 4 qualifying Continental tires. Don't forget about no credit financing. Layaway is also available. As always, use your Graco's Tire Pros credit card. Don't have one? Apply online at GracosTirePros.com. The annual traction sale is going on now at Graco's Tire Pros on Main across from Maverick.
So you just got home from work and you find that your fur baby is sick. Just like when your child is sick, you don't want your poor dog to suffer overnight. But who do you call? Emory and Carbon Animal Health is here for you. They offer after-hours emergency pet care, so you don't have to spend the whole night worrying. Just give them a call. 637-VETS any hour of the day or night, and they will be there to help. With a friendly and knowledgeable staff, your fur baby is in good hands at Emory and Carbon Animal Health. Call 637-VETS.
The hunts are here again, and this year you're going to be ready with a new truck. Well, at least a new-to-you truck. Desert View Federal Credit Union is here to help. With the great rates at Desert View Federal Credit Union, you can get more truck for your money. Plus, for a limited time, Desert View is giving you up to 1% cash back. So go into a branch in Huntington or Farron today, get pre-approved, and get shopping for that truck before the hunt gets here.
Membership and eligibility apply. Loans on approved credit. Member NCUA.
This year has been so different. There's been a lot more indoor time, which means more use for your carpets. Muddy feet, spills, even pet hair. Did your carpet make it? Well, with the holidays coming up, now is the perfect time to schedule an appointment with Clean Tech Cleaning and Restoration. They can get your carpets, tile, even your blinds cleaned in time for all your holiday festivities. Call Clean Tech Cleaning and Restoration at 650-1933 and leave the dirty work to them.
You were listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Extremely excited to bring in our next guest here on Drive Time Sports. We're on the eve of one of the biggest elections in our country's history. And our next guest has been very vocal about the election. He also happens to be one of the greatest college football players of all time. Won the Heisman in 1982, won a national championship in 1980, and is the only player in NCAA history to finish in the top three in Heisman voting all 3 years of his collegiate career. He was also involved in one of the biggest trades in NFL history. He is Herschel Walker, and he is joining us right now over the phone. Herschel, it is a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
No, thank you for having me on.
I know it's a very important time. You've been making the rounds all around the country, national media, election day tomorrow, one of the biggest days in the for our country of the year, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But as I alluded to, one of the greatest college football players to ever play the game. You made some amazing accomplishments at Georgia, winning a national championship, winning a Heisman Trophy, going on to the NFL. And at this stage now, Herschel, which one of those accomplishments mean the most? I guess maybe not even one individual accomplishment, but the multiple accomplishments that you had in the college realm. What stands out to you?
Well, you know, I think just having an opportunity just to play college football, I think, is more of an accomplishment than anything, because from the little town that I came from, you know, you never dream that a kid can come out of a small town like that. But I think that given that privilege to do that, I think I've helped to inspire a lot of young kids and let them know that no matter where you're from, no matter who you are, you can accomplish something if you work at it. You dedicate yourself, you have to sacrifice, and you can do it. And I don't think it got anything to do with awards. I think it just got to do with having that ability to go to college, to get an education, to exceed, to go farther.
Does it mean a lot to you when you hear people all these decades later talking about you as being, if not the greatest, one of the greatest college football players of all time? Does that mean anything?
I know it does. It means a great deal. That means that I was doing a job that I was supposed to do. And one of the things I've been saying for a long time, and people don't understand this, and I hope a lot of people listening to me now do, is that, you know, Herschel Walker got a lot of awards and stuff in college. But one thing that I'm ashamed of, and I say I think I must say that, I am shocked that not one of my offensive linemen ever made All-American. And I don't know how a running back like myself can be awarded every award in the world as one of the greatest running backs to ever play, but have an offensive line that not one of them ever be known as an All-American or their name be known, but yet they needed to get a big award for doing the things it did for me.
Well, if we go back to your college days, one of the games that I have always been fascinated with is the 1981 Sugar Bowl, where you guys topped Notre Dame 17-10. This solidifies the national championship. And for those who are unaware, Herschel, you finished with 150 yards, 55 in the second half. But really, when you look at the impressiveness of it, you separated your shoulder. And that's what's absolutely incredible to me. Here you are competing for a national championship injured, and you guys find a way to get the job done against a very good Notre Dame football team.
Well, you know, and that's what people talk about. You know, I separated my shoulder the second play of the game, and the doctors told me I couldn't play anymore. And as I thought about it, I came from a small town. A lot of people from my little hometown, you know, they did what they could to get to see me play in New Orleans, and I was not going to let them down. And my team, you know, we had worked so hard to get there. We were playing a great team like Notre Dame, and I was there's no way I'm going to let my teammates down, let my town down, let my state down by not playing. And I figured, you know, it's only going to be 60 minutes. Now, all I got to do is bear the pain for 60 minutes. And for 60 minutes, I think you can do almost anything.
Is that the most memorable game that you have during your college career? I know you accomplished so much, but that win did solidify a national title.
I tell you, that's one of them because of me separating my shoulder and because of the people Notre Dame had, that no one ever thought that a small team from Georgia, because Notre Dame was, you know, as on books, was picked to beat us. You know, they were bigger, they were faster, they had more pro scouts on their team. But that just goes to show you no one can ever know your heart. That I think you never count a team out, that you go out and you work together, you play together, you win and you lose together, you can accomplish some great things.
Again, our guest right now is Herschel Walker as we talk about his career and what's happening right now here in the country, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Herschel, you're one of the very interesting players because the USFL ties into your career, and we have talked about the USFL many of times here on the show. There are a lot of fantastic, great football players that participated in that league. If we go back to your college days coming to an end, you making the jump to the USFL where you had a lot of success. I mean, you set the professional football record for single-season rushing yards in 1985. When you go back and you look at your career at the USFL, just having two professional leagues, how different was it for kids coming out of college back then compared to now?
Well, it was totally different because, you know, back then they would not let a college athlete go into the pros. The NFL wouldn't take them. And whereas today they do, and back then going to the USFL really, I think, helped my career out a lot. And people always ask me why I say that. And I said, you know, leaving Georgia, everyone thought I was just, quote, a running back. Everyone thought I could just run the ball. But I think going to the USFL, people saw that I was a football player. I can play a lot of different positions. And when I got to the pros, even at Dallas, my very first year, I broke the receiving record for the Dallas Cowboys. And I was supposed to be in a running back, but I broke that receiving record, and they've had so many great receivers. And because I started playing a lot of different positions in the USFL, and people saw I can do that, so I started returning kickoffs. I started running downs on kicks because I wanted to do that. I wanted to do things and be a great football player, not just a great running back, but a great football player.
Did you feel like you had something to prove when you went from the USFL to the NFL? And I know that probably sounds like a dumb question because you had one of the most decorative careers ever for a running back at that particular time. But in your mind, did you have something to prove going to the NFL?
No, I really didn't think it like that. And the reason I didn't, because, you know, I also was a track guy. So I was running with some of the fastest guys in the world at my size, even at that time. And so I really never went out to ever say I want to prove something to someone else. I always wanted to prove it to myself because, you know, as a little kid, I was bullied. As a little kid, I was overweight, had a speech impediment. Not too many people gave me the time of day. And I went out and I started training. So I had to prove things to myself that I wouldn't give up. I would never quit. I would continue to strive to be the very best in the athletic world or anything I ever done. So I really was trying to prove things to myself.
If it was football, if it was track and field, or if we go back, you know, a decade or so ago with you stepping into the mixed martial arts cage, Herschel, I've always used you as an example for kids today, especially high school athletes who want to specialize in one sport. You have to be well-versed, and I think you were the perfect example of that, being not only one of the greatest football players, but one of the greatest athletes that we've ever seen.
Well, and that's what I tell a lot of kids, and I tell parents that as well. You know, sometimes you want to be a great football player, but you never know. You don't know where your talent lies, and sometimes you have to go with it because, you know, I really didn't understand it. You know, I was not a great football player when I was a little kid. I couldn't even play. I didn't even understand it. I read about football in a book. But one of the things I did is I would work at it. I worked at it, and I worked at it the same thing I did in track and field. But you never know. So I want the kids to be very versed, and as when they're small, do a lot of different sports. Be a lot of different sports because you never know what type of muscle quickness you're going to have and what you're going to develop to be. And don't let anyone try to put you in a hole and tell you you're good at this right here because they don't even know at that time.
Again, Herschel Walker, our guest right now. Herschel, if we talk about today, I know you have made the media rounds over the last little while. Election Day, this is one of the biggest days every 4 years here in this country when you get to vote for a presidential candidate. And we're on the eve of Election Day. And boy, you've been all over the place talking about this election. Maybe one of the biggest elections in our country's history.
It is one of the biggest ones because, you know, as you look at it today, you know, you have the Democratic Party right now, which is, I'm sort of ashamed of, that seem to want to remove your speech. They seem to want to remove your religion. They seem to want to remove your guns. That is the rights of the Constitution of the United States of America. And I said, guys, you know what's so strange about it is we're the greatest country in the world. And right now we seem to have a group that want to just say that we need to live off the government. That seems what they want to do. They want us to just be quiet, don't say anything. If you say something, you're racist. And that's one reason I told a lot of the commissioners in the professional sports league or even in college, do not put politics into sports. Because now you're making every player on that team not be able to say what they believe in because they said they're going to be labeled as a racist when it's got nothing to do with not deciding on the same thing. Just because you disagree with someone do not mean you're racist. Well, that's been the hot word, the buzzword out there right now, and I think that's what's wrong.
You talk about politics moving into sports. And Herschel, one of the things that's bothered me about it is if one athlete speaks up in a sport, it seems like the entire league is grouped in with that one athlete. And we had that issue in the NBA, and I don't have to mention names, and we had that issue in the NFL. All in all, I feel that that's ultimately wrong. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree with it. You know, this is a team sport, and I think that's when you start separating players. You know, what player can go home, like what white player can go home and tell his 10-year-old son Black Lives Matter, like their lives matter more than your life? That is very hard to understand. And I think right now we start talking about Black Lives Matter, you know, it was a Marxist organization. The organization didn't mean well. The phrase that may have meant well, but America's lives matter. So other people's lives matter as well. And I think when the commissioner start picking a side, I think that's what is wrong. Now you're telling everyone on that team you better decide this way, otherwise you're going to be against everyone else. And that's not what you're supposed to do. As a team, you play as a team, you live as a team, you eat as a team, you lose as a team, but you don't start separating the team. And I think that's what you do when you put politics in it.
Herschel Walker, our guest right now, again, one of the greatest college football players to ever play. Herschel, I have thoroughly enjoyed the last 12, 13 minutes or so. I know you're very busy. You have a lot of other spots you got to hit up. But I thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking out the time to join us on the show today. It was truly a pleasure to speak with you.
No, thank you, and God bless. Now, thank you.
You've been listening to the best of Drive Time Sports. To listen on demand, visit CastleCountryRadio.com. Tomorrow, we'll continue to replay some of the best national interviews of 2020.
This is Eastern Utah's news and weather station, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, KOAL, Price.